All right. We are going to start this morning with some scripture, but it's going to be done in the way that we've done it a lot more recently, with something a little bit more active, something to get us engaged with it a bit more. So we're going to actually hear some imaginings of a kind of creative expression from Genesis chapter 2, and Susanna and Rosalie are going to help us with that. They're going to be reading some parts, but you are also going to help us with that, because this Genesis passage is all about the creation. So you're going to need to help illustrate for us some of the colors of creation, okay? And the way that's going to work is if you could all find a piece of cloth in there, and if not everybody gets one, we can maybe share, and some of them are quite large, so you'll need to kind of, you know, maybe give yourself some space. And maybe kind of fold it a little bit there, Russell, if you need to, so that no one trips on it. Yep, good. Okay, I see you all have some fabric for the most part. That's great. So Susanna and Rosalie, if you want to stand up. And what I'm going to do, children, is I'm going to actually have these cue cards. Do you see how I have these cue cards? Okay, when I put up a cue card with a color on it, if you have that color, I want you to just wave your fabric. So. Yeah, that's great practicing right there, Sam. That's perfect. So now, if you all want to leave your fabric by your side, nice and still like a statue, can you do that? Statue. Perfect. Wow, you're good statues. Oh, wow, Landon. That's an impressive statue. Okay. So, Rosalie, do you want to go up to the mic up over here? Here, I'll give this to you, Susanna.
Sure.
Watch me for the cue cards, and when you see your color, then you wave your fabric, okay?
In the day that God made the earth and the heavens, before there were plants, even before it had ever rained, a stream rose and watered the ground.
Then God formed a man from the dust of the ground. God breathed in the man's nostrils and became alive.
God planted a beautiful garden in Eden. God made every type of tree grow up from the ground.
Green, yellow, and brown. And yellow. And yellow.
The trees were wonderful and full of delicious fruit. In the middle of the garden grew the tree of life. Beside it was another tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
A river flowed out of this beautiful garden. And it became four rivers, flowing around lands with gold, and onyx stone.
God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to care for the land. God said, "You may eat of every tree in the garden, except for the tree of knowledge of good and evil. If you eat from that tree, you will die."
God formed every living creature. Animals and birds came to the man to be cared for and named.
All right. So did any of you catch what we're going to be talking about over the summer? Did anybody hear what I had said we were talking about? It looks like Susanna heard. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, John Eric, maybe. Yeah, his lifting is. Oh, he's got this up. Peace. Yes. Our series is going to be called Seeking Peace Together. And we're actually doing this, I think it's 12 Sundays or so. So it's a long time talking about peace, but we're going to do it in some sections. So we're going to talk about peace with creation, which is our theme that we're kind of doing for the next three Sundays, and then peace with others, and then peace with God after that. What do you think of, all of you here up front, what do you think of when you think of the word peace? Yeah. When the war is done. Russell says when the war is done. Yeah. Yeah. Susanna?
Calm.
Calm. Anybody else? Peace. What do you think of it? Yeah, Charlie. Friends. Hey, that's a good one. Yeah, Sam. Nice. The word nice. Yep. Yep. Others too from the congregation? Peace. What do you think of when you think of peace?
A dove.
A dove. Yep. Lily? Yep. Yep.
Quiet and stillness.
Quiet and stillness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody that hasn't shared yet that wants to share? No? Nature, yeah, Charlie?
Life.
Those are all great, great answers. Did you notice when Susanna and Rosalie were talking and when you were waving all of your fabrics that God cared for the earth? Part of God's caring for the earth was filling it with wonderful things. What were some of those wonderful things? Did we catch what the wonderful things were? Sam?
Trees
and birds.
Water.
Susanna?
A river.
Yep. Yeah, Landon.
Rocks.
Yep. Other things? There was something else that started with the word. There was a two-word description. It was delicious.
Fruit.
Hey, you were listening. Delicious fruit. Mm-hmm. So did you notice what God had asked the first humans to do in when they were, as you know, part of the, what's that? Name the animals. You're right. Yeah. And Rosalie?
To care for the garden.
Uh-huh. To care for the garden. So they were supposed to be gardeners. They were supposed to take care of the earth that God had created. That's right. Did you notice that there was a warning? What was the warning? They shouldn't eat from the tree of knowledge of, anybody remember what it was? Good and evil, I heard someone say. Yeah. Or they would die. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So they were not supposed to eat from a tree. A warning about what to eat. That's interesting. I wonder if there's a connection there that maybe sometimes we need to be thoughtful about the kind of foods we eat as a way for fulfilling our role of taking care of God's garden. Maybe sometimes there are good foods to eat and not so great foods to eat, maybe for our bodies, but also for the earth because of the impact that it might have. Do we have ideas for what kinds of foods might be good to eat that are good for you? Yeah, Sam. Fruits and vegetables. Good thing that there was the delicious fruit on the trees, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, Charlie? Russell, sorry?
Grains.
Grains and protein. Yep. And you can get protein from a few different sources, right? Where can you all get protein from? Okay, eggs. Yeah. Charlie?
Apples,
so fruit again, yeah.
Milk,
okay, some calcium, and yep. Susanna?
For some reason, when you said that, I
thought of lettuce. Okay, so greens, yeah. Well, you know, I had this idea, because part of what I was thinking is that, you know, one of the things we hear nowadays in the news and with wanting to be more concerned about climate is that we should try to reduce the amount of meat we eat, right? And many of you mentioned vegetables as being a good thing to eat. So I thought, wouldn't it be fun to eat something together in church? We like to do that often. Uh-huh, yeah. So I brought a fresh snack that I think is good for us and also illustrates for us a good thing to grow in the earth, right? And I have it here. And it kind of actually connects in a what do you call this, a alliteration, is that what it is? With our theme for today. We have peas for peace. So I have some peas here. These are Ontario sweet peas. So maybe they, I don't know, I doubt that they've been grown close to us here, but probably more in the Niagara area is where these came from. Teterville, Ontario, I think is where they came from. And these are Ontario sweet peas. Now, these are the kinds you can't eat the shell. Maybe you could, but it might be quite a bit of fiber to chew on. But does anybody want to come and get some and crack it open and see if there's something delicious inside to have? See what you think. And I want to take a moment, once you each have one, and open it up. Do you know how to open them? And don't worry, we'll get the garbage afterwards and do some cleanup. Did you find something? Yeah, pop it into your hand. I'm going to take one too. And maybe we can even pass this around. And some others in the congregation can share too. I'm going to try one here. Has anybody tried some yet? What do you think? Here, do you need some help, Landon? Here, you want to try? Oh, you got it, perfect. Oh my goodness, they are so good. Mm-hmm. Landon's not so sure. Oh, okay. They're that good. That's perfect. Wow. They're so good that they don't even taste good. Yeah. Yeah. So I want all of you to think of this image. Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. Of peas for peace. And think about how the food we eat is important for us to think about. And maybe where it comes from and the impact that it has on the earth. And you know what? If I could actually ask you, William, could you take that container and pass it? Start with Dorothy and Greg, and then we'll pass it through the congregation and others can have some too. And then before you go back to your seats, I'm going to sing a song with you all. And I think many of you know it. I know for sure the Paradise Children know it. And it's a song of peace. Do you remember the Song of Peace song from Selah's song? And so today we're doing it. Today, you remember it too. It's on Spotify? Come on. That's awesome. I'll have to check that out. We're going to actually sing this song in our future Sundays throughout the summer as the song for you to come up to. Yeah, for you, the song that'll bring you up to the front. But today we're going to do it as the song that sends us, okay? So I'm going to get my guitar and then we'll sing. And then you can go back after that. Okay, are you ready? I'll play the first few chords to get us remembering kind of the rhythm, and then we'll go. Won't you sing with me? Won't you sing a song of peace? Won't you sing with me? Won't you sing? How about you get up now and start walking back and sing while we go, okay? Won't you sing with me? Won't you sing a song of peace? Won't you sing with me? Won't you sing a song of peace? Good morning.
So when Zach asked if I would do a faith story about caring for the earth as peacemaking, I decided to focus on water. So then I thought, oh, I should dig out that blue scarf and drape it across the pulpit. But I see we have a river here on our worship table. So that can be a focal point for us. And I chose that partly because I've been thinking about water. I've been reading this book. It's called Water, Our Sacred Trust, and it's by Bob Burt, who I think was a local reporter. And it's a story about Waterloo Region's most important resource and the challenges it faces. So I decided to focus my thoughts around water. Of course, we all know that water sustains life and that without water, there would be no life as we know it. Last summer, I had a marvelous opportunity to join the two-row on the Grand. This 10-day paddle on the Grand River brings together Indigenous folks from Six Nations and settler folks for a shared experience on the river. My friend Janet and I joined for the last 5 days of the trip, and we started near Oswiecan on Six Nations and ended at Port Maitland, where the river flows into Lake Erie near Dunnville. I loved the experience, being on the river and paddling through territory that was close to the farm where I spent my childhood, was quite wonderful. The week included some cultural and environmental teaching, mostly by Indigenous folks, not just, but mostly by those folks. And the first day's teaching was about the Haudenosaunee Thanksgiving Address. So each day, this is a sort of like a prayer, and it addresses different parts of creation. Each day before setting out on the water, we would gather in a circle, and an elder would speak the Thanksgiving address, either in the Mohawk or Cayuga language, depending on who was doing the speaking. And here from the book Braiding Sweetgrass is the portion of the Thanksgiving address that addresses water. We give thanks to all the waters of the world for quenching our thirst, for providing strength and nurturing life for all beings. We know its power in many forms: waterfalls and rain, mists and streams, rivers and oceans, snow and ice. We are grateful that the waters are still here and meeting their responsibility to the rest of creation. Can we agree that water is important to our lives and bring our minds together as one to send greetings and thanks to the water? Now our minds are one. To circle back to the topic for today, we might wonder, how can water stewardship be thought of as peacemaking? While we live in a region where we can easily be lulled into taking clean and abundant water for granted, this is not the case in many parts of the world, including many communities, mostly Northern Indigenous ones, in Canada. In the global context, water will be an increasingly precious and scarce resource in the coming decades as our climate changes and the earth becomes hotter and drier. Just as there have been wars over oil, and I'm quoting here, there have been and will be wars fought over water. According to Peter Gleick of the Pacific Institute, there have been about 500 water-related conflicts since 1900, and about half of them have occurred after the year 2010. So that's a lot in the last 13 years. And here's a quote from Maude Barlow, the Canadian water activist and author. Despite our shared mythology of limitless water, Canada is not immune to this, the world's most pressing problem. We face serious issues of water contamination, eutrophication, over-extraction, glacial melt, and climate change. Mining, energy projects, and bottled water operations all pose harm to Canada's waterways and water supply, as does the renewed calls to allow bulk water exports to drought-stricken parts of the United States. Certainly, our water supply here in the Kitchener-Waterloo area is not without its vulnerabilities. In reading this book, I was shocked to learn something that many of you will probably be very familiar with, having lived through it, and that is of the poisoning of Elmira's wells or groundwater supplies in 1989 as a result of poor waste disposal practices by the Uniroyal Chemical Company plant. I hadn't known about this, so I learned that the region had to hastily construct a water pipeline to Elmira. The cleanup cost over $100 million is still not complete, and the water is still not fit to drink. I also learned that prior to 1990, and that was when the Mannheim Water Treatment Plant was built to treat water from the Grand River, which now comprises about 20 to 25% of our water supply, the region had been considering an expensive option of a pipeline from Lake Erie or Lake Huron, which I hadn't known of either. Adding the use of water from the Grand River to supplement the region's groundwater wells, together with conservation measures, has served the region well for the past several decades. At least that's my impression. but according to Bob Burt, there are now some significant questions that loom over both the Grand River and the groundwater supplies. Serious questions have been raised about high salt levels, found in municipal wells, particularly those in the urban areas, where there are lots of roads and large parking lots. Dramatic changes in weather patterns brought on by climate change will make it harder to predict how much water might be safely extracted from the ground. And of course, with projected growth in population, there will be corresponding greater demand on water resources. So in this context, we can all do our part by being mindful of water as a precious resource and stewarding it carefully. And you know, maybe we can begin to see those links with peacemaking when we know that the conflict that happens when, you know, when resources are in short supply. Some things that Greg and I do include keeping showers short, doing a sponge bath instead of a shower, flushing the toilet only when necessary, using household gray water, especially water from the dehumidifier to water the garden, and using salt sparingly in winter. So that's a lot about our region. And then looking beyond our region to California, where so much of the produce in our grocery stores come from, we can be pretty sure that the water shortages that California has experienced in recent years will probably only get worse. Too much is being demanded of the Colorado River, which serves as the source of water for California, plus six other states in the American Southwest, plus two Mexican states, for a staggering total of 40 million people. So in California, 75% of water resources are slurped up by agriculture. And when our family traveled through the Central Valley there, when we were in California several years ago, we saw the vast fields and orchards all dependent on irrigation. It really, you know, thinking of the fact that the Colorado River reserves are known to be declining, it really just takes common sense to conclude that agriculture as it's currently practiced in California's Central Valley is not very sustainable. So that has caused Greg and me to change our eating and buying habits somewhat. We have, I would say, significantly reduced the amount of imported produce that we buy. And specifically, we have chosen to pretty much cross almonds off our grocery list. According to a Wikipedia article, as of the year 2015, almond cultivation consumed about 10% of California's water use. So these things I consider acts rooted in the spirit of peace building, as we can be pretty certain that the scrabble for the over-allocated water of the Colorado River is only going to intensify in coming years. I have to say, when I chose the topic of water for my sharing today, I didn't know that this week we here in Southern Ontario would be breathing in the smoke from the fires raging north of us. And like last year, our land is pretty dry and parched, and you know, the specter of another year of drought may be looming. We'll have to see. Oh, for the rains to come and quench the fires, to moisten the earth, to freshen things growing. It feels as if, whether we're ready or not, that climate change is starting to be more upon us. So I encourage each of you to think about, you know, what you can do, what action you might be able to take, what you might be able to give up as an act of caring for the earth. And I want to close on a note of encouragement for us all, which I've found in Romans 12, verse 12. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer.
Thank you so much, Dorothy, for sharing with us this morning your thoughts and what you and Greg are doing as part of your act of peacemaking. When I had asked Dorothy if she would be willing to share a faith story about joining God and caring for the earth, and she agreed, saying she was going to focus on water, I immediately thought of some recent connections that Mennonite Church Eastern Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Working Group has had with some of our Indigenous neighbours. Not too long ago, MCEC hosted a year-long online storytelling series centered on covenants made, broken, and renewed. This series included Indigenous and Mennonite settler voices, shining light on the history of broken covenants, and illuminating pathways of hope to a more just future for all nations on this land. One featured guest in the storytelling series was Mary Ann Kabayosi. Mary Ann is Ojibwe Anishinaabe Kwe. She is an artist, counselor, and PhD candidate in Indigenous Studies at Trent, and she's also a water walker. What is a water walker, you might ask? Well, instead of telling you about what a water walker is, I'm going to show you a short video that will give you a good idea. As you watch this video, I hope it will begin to spur your imaginations as to what it might mean to care for the earth by caring for and being considerate of our water source that we gain our life from, as Dorothy said. And after the video is over, then we'll move on to our hymn of response.